The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com. At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
Welcome back to the Paddle and Fin Podcast Network. We're brought to you by Pelican Built Tough. For all situations, go to pelican.com. Yak Gadget. For all your fine kayak fishing accessory needs, go to yakgadget.com. Eastport Marina on the beautiful shores of Dale Hollow Lake. For all your lodging, kayaking, and fishing needs, go to eastport.info. Now let's get this show started.
Welcome back to another episode of Bass Fishing for Noobs here on the Paddle and Fin Podcast. I am your host, Sean Lavery, and I'd like to thank you guys for tuning in tonight. We're back to our kind of regularly scheduled events after kind of a couple weeks of other people filling in for me, and then I missed a week, and then I did a recap of my Hobie BOS tournament for last week's show. So kind of back to our regular, normally scheduled show with guests and stuff. Before I bring on tonight's guest, I want to do a quick shout out to Cheryl Bentley, who won the Bass Fishing for Noobs Paddle and Fin Noobs tournament for July. Congrats. She had 88.5 inches. Actually, it was a tie for first place, it looks like, but she had the bigger fish, so she gets first place over Chase Barnes, who also had 88.5 inches. And Michael Graham took third place with 88 inches even. So congrats to you three. Definitely a good showing. I tuck my tail and bow in shame to you guys because I didn't even put a fish on the board in July. Now, that didn't mean I didn't catch any fish. I just never had my noobs identifier with me for the fish that I did catch. But I did make up for it. I'm already on the board for the August tournament. So you guys get out there and get on the water, and I'm going to do my best to put up a respectable month for August. So thanks again for everybody who's joining in on those, and for everybody's tuning into the Facebook group for that noobs tournament as well, because there's lots of great conversations out there. All right, guys. Well, enough of the kind of getting caught up on the noob stuff. I'd like to bring in tonight's special guest, Jake Harshman. Welcome back to the noob show, Jake.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Good. So how are you?
Not too bad. Had a successful weekend, and
I kind of expected to see a big check behind you, you know, sitting somewhere.
Yeah, my wife told me that I got to stop putting them up here because the dogs start chewing on them. So,
yeah, gotcha. Well, for the folks who don't know, Jake had a really good showing at the Hobie BOS here on the Susquehanna, the same tournament that I kind of floundered in. He actually did really good in. Took third place, correct?
Yep.
And third place out of 200 of the best anglers, well, and me, so 199, we'll say.
At the end of the weekend, we actually only had 192 participants.
I remember seeing that the last, when I checked the numbers. So, yeah, give or take, a few people. And
still good.
Tons of hammers, too. Like, all the big names, most of the big names, but... first of all, congrats. I know you did a ton of work, put in a lot of work for that. You definitely did your homework and scouted out. You've been doing that for months, that's definitely, well earned. Like I said, I remember posting that to you cause, you worked harder than anybody that I know. So, definitely well earned, but, I wanted to try and pick your brain a little bit more for my own selfishness, you know, but I figured it'll help our guests or our listeners too, who might be interested in what worked for you. And because I know what didn't work for me, and I tried to fish my strengths because I didn't do anywhere near the homework that you did. I ended up with COVID the 2 weeks before the tournament, so I didn't get to pre-fish hardly at all. So I just went with what I know works here down in the southern end of the Susquehanna, and it did not work up there, to say the least. So
sorry about the yawn. I got to apologize in advance. I took my wife out for her birthday tonight, and we had Olive Garden, and I'm pretty sure they put melatonin and it's and possibly even some THC in our food. It was yeah. So I'm not yawning at you if I yawn.
No problem. Well, wish her a happy birthday from us, and I thank you for taking the time on her birthday to come on with us. So I appreciate that.
Well, I don't think she minds. She's probably gonna be. You'll probably hear her snoring here soon.
So. Well, if it makes you feel any better, I was supposed to meet with Brian Schiller, who's the head of Paddle and Fin, right before I got on with you. And he messaged me probably about a half an hour before that and said, hey, my wife wants to go out. So I'm going to go out with her. I'll talk to you afterwards. I'm like, all right, man. So sounds like everybody's taking a night with the wife. So but anyway, so one of the things that I wanted to ask you about was what the water that you fished, was it fast moving?
Yes.
Okay. Absolutely. And that's what kind of most of the water that I fished was too, until I got down to City Island, which that was more like a pool, which was nice because I liked it because I could paddle really easy. I could pedal, which I didn't get to do much of right. In the fast moving stuff. I was going to ask you too, were you fishing out of the iTrack, I think?
I was. I fished out of the iTrack all weekend up until about 1:30 p.m. on Sunday.
Okay. Okay. I was curious how that – oh, you put a whole – I knew that you had I was going to ask you about that too. I saw you posted about dropping a fish on it and it punctured through the deck matting.
So that's happened out of the handful of times that I've had it out. I would say about 75% of the time I've put holes in it, small fish fin holes.
Okay.
The hole that I put in it Sunday afternoon was a Black Widow.
Oh man.
I couldn't even make it back to my launch, and I was floating down river looking like a taco. So you know, kayak was kind of folding up, and I was
just, oh man.
There was a lady standing on the bank where I took out at, and she's like, are you okay? And I'm like, I think so.
So well, interesting. I mean, I was actually pretty much set that was going to be my next kayak. And then I saw, you know, that you were able to puncture it just with the fish fins. And I'm like, that's probably not,
you know, work. I mean, you want to talk about that quick?
A little bit. Yeah, sure. Cause I'm still curious. I want you to talk me back into wanting to get it.
So I'm going to give you all of the positives of it first.
Okay.
And then I'm going to talk about the negatives because I don't want to be overly negative about the platform because it's still a really amazing platform. It just Hobie needs to do something with it to make it a fishing platform. In terms of it being a recreational platform, it's amazing. That little boat is so cool. It's so fast. It drafts like this much water. You know, it's just a really awesome, stable, fast little platform that has a lot of upside. You know, when you are only drafting that much water and you can pedal in that much water because you do the flutter kick thing, mm-hmm. It really gives you an edge over most everybody else fishing around you right now, because our river is so low right now,
right?
That it gives you a huge advantage. You know, it's lightweight. You can literally take it and go wherever. I'll be honest with you. Both days I did some creative access points. They were legal, but they were creative. They were someplace that nobody else was going to go to unless they had that kind of boat. And I think that's, you know, that's one of the things that helped me have success is that I was able to get away from everybody. I didn't have anybody fishing in my area until Sunday. And whenever they saw me, like, I guess they recognized who I was and they left the area. So, you know, thankful for them. They didn't have to do that, but they did. But, you know, having that ability to have a throw and go boat like that, to get real creative and use some real sketchy access points, places that you probably wouldn't want to take a big pro angler or any other kind of heavy boat.
Well, I'll tell you where I took out of on Saturday afternoon was a sketchy takeout, and I had my Outback and I barely drug it up the bank where I got out. I had to make like five trips because I emptied it out. And then I carried everything up to the top of the hill, and then I drug my kayak up, and I didn't know I was going to make it.
Would be willing to bet that you took out where I put in at with Jeff Little today because we went out filming.
Okay.
If I had to guess, just based on what you've told me already, I think I put in where you took out at.
Gotcha.
And it is. It's a little sketchy. There's only a limited amount of parking. You kind of got to go under a troll bridge to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Yes. So,
you know, it's yeah. But, you know, having a boat like the iTrek makes it incredibly easy to do. So now let's talk about the negative aspects of it. Right.
Okay. Yep.
So for $2,900, I think is the retail. It doesn't come with a 180 drive. It only comes with the GT drive.
That was another thing that really shocked me. And I didn't realize it at first until I heard you mention it in your video. And I'm like, what the heck?
Yeah. So like you're paying a premium price for a boat and you're not even getting like the most up-to-date technology. So there's that aspect of it.
That point didn't bother me as much because I think my Mirage drive will fit in there.
Yeah, so. If you have an Outback 180 drive with kick-up fins, it will fit. All the Hobie drives will fit except for the 360.
Right. 360 drive won't. That one didn't bother me as much because I knew I had a workaround, but it still kind of bummed me out that, you know, that I paid less than that for my Outback. And I was like, you know, and it's not.
Me too. It bumped me out too whenever I got it and realized it was only a GT drive. So there's that aspect of it. But so here's what Hobie did. When you look at the i11S, which was the previous model of this boat, and you compare it to the iTrek 11, they decreased the weight like 20 pounds overall.
Okay.
Which is really great in theory, right? Okay, you made it lighter. You made it easier to use, like access and, you know, even maneuverability. But where they decreased that weight is where I have a huge problem. Let's talk about what they did better. They made the seat a whole heck of a lot better. They're using the same seat that comes on the Lynx, same rudder that comes on the Lynx. It's, you know, that rudder and seat was a huge upgrade compared to the i11S.
Right.
But they decreased weight in the amount of fabric, or not fabric, but material that they used in the hull. The i11S was a 1,000 denier thickness, and the iTrek 11 is a 500 denier thickness.
Wow.
They also decreased the thickness of the deck mat material. They made the deck mat more comfortable, but they decreased the thickness of it, which they turned it from what was an amazing fishing platform to a truly recreational platform. I would not recommend this boat for somebody who intends to fish out of it, especially if they intend to fish out of a shallow rocky river environment like we have. Because the way I put a hole in my boat on Sunday afternoon was I literally ran up onto a rock, something that I would have done with a rotor motor boat, something that I would have done with, you know, any other inflatable that was a 1,000 denier, and it wouldn't have been an issue. This rock was not like it didn't have, you know, like glass on it, or there wasn't metal sticking up or anything like that. It was just a rock. And I wedged up on it because I was in fast current. I wedged up on it to kind of, you know, sit myself still. And whenever I came back off of it, I noticed that there was like, I was hearing like a fizz. And I knew that, okay, well, you know, I'm sure that I had a fish that, you know, probably put a another hole in the deck, and I'm looking all around on the deck and I can't see the hole or can't see where the fizz is coming from. So I just put it out of my mind and I'm like, well, you know, maybe it's on one of the side pontoons, right? Maybe that last fish that jumped towards the kayak had poked a hole in the side pontoon. That's not out of the realm of possibility.
Right.
But then I started to feel a little squishy. Like I was a little squishy in my seat.
That's not a good feeling.
This isn't good. So then I reached down and I poked one finger down on the deck of the boat and I was able to make an indent in it. Oh. And I'm like, okay, I'm losing air in the main chamber. Like there's a hole in the main chamber somewhere that is significant because I'm losing air at a much, you know, faster rate than I had off of any fish fin poke hole, you know?
Gotcha.
So that's, you know, that's whenever I looked at it and I'm like, gosh, I'm sitting at 185 inches. At that point in time, I think I was in second place. I'm like, how far do I push this? Right.
Right.
You know, what do I do? How far do I push this to try to make 10 grand?
Right. No, for sure. I can't even imagine having to make those kind of decisions. That's
well, I can tell you that the decision was incredibly difficult. But I literally sat there and I thought for a minute and I'm like, you know what? $10,000 is not worth my life. I was in an area that had deeper water that was very fast and there was a lot of rock structure and, you know, I had all my gear, of course, and it's like, you know what?
Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too. No matter where you are, discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
It's just not intelligent to stay out here. So I knew that I wasn't going to be able to make it back to where I launched at. Even if I did make it back to where I launched at, I wasn't going to be able to get my boat up because at the rate that I was losing air, my wheels wouldn't have done me any good because the wheels would have just rubbed on the bottom of the kayak and I would have had to have made like 8 or 9 trips back and forth, which just didn't make any sense. And so I called. Plus, I would have had to cross a really deep channel to get to where I launched at. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to chance that in fast water. Because the other thing that was happening is that as I lost air, I lost maneuverability. The current basically had its way with me. You know, whenever I started kind of sinking down into the middle of the boat, right. And I was like, you know what, this is a safety issue. It's a safety concern. So I called the tournament director. I said, hey, Cody, I got to get off the water. I punctured my boat. I'm losing air at a very fast rate. The closest launch to me is not a public access. But I need to know, like, can I get off the water at this access point due to safety? And he said, yeah, absolutely. It's a safety issue. He's like, do you need me to send somebody for you? And I was like, you're not going to be able to get anybody to me. Like where I'm at, you're not going to be able to get a jet boat. There's no one's going to be able to get to me where I'm at. So I actually, you know, floated down and I got off the water. And then whenever I got off the water, I learned that this is not a private access point anymore. I learned that the municipality that it was in actually was bought and now turned into parks and rec for the municipality. So,
wow. Okay. Well, that's good to know.
I learned a new access point.
There you go.
But yeah, so that sounds like a really
negative. So it almost sounds like your decision was made for you, really. I mean, you couldn't really continue.
I mean, I could have stayed out there and waited. True. I could have waited and then I could have swam my boat back across the channel. But you know, what's the chance, like what happens if I go to swim my boat across the channel and it starts pulling me down, you know, then I don't want to drown because I'm tethered to it.
Right.
You know, so there was a lot of factors that came into play and, you know, I had to make a decision. Like is third place good enough? Is second place good enough? Like, am I going to drop to fourth or fifth? Like, is there somebody that hasn't uploaded fish? You know, so I had to make a lot of decisions or think about a lot of things making that decision. And you know, I feel like I made the right choice. But the reality is that coming back to the iTrek 11, I would not recommend it to anybody as a fishing platform until Hobie either increases the material mm-hmm. or comes up with some sort of fix to reinforce the material. Because it's not designed for what we do out of it. It's just not. You know, if a fish fin can pop holes in the deck material, and you know, you expect to get fish fins in the side pontoons because they crash into the boat. That's where you're landing them. Something, you know, you can't control what they do. So right. You kind of expect that. But the deck and the underside of it.
Right.
You shouldn't have to deal with that, you know?
Right.
That's an area that they should have maybe not skimped on material.
No, yeah. That makes sense for sure. I mean, and I was wondering, how do you even patch it if it's under the deck matting? Like,
so yeah, well, if it's under the deck matting, what I did whenever I punctured it on Monday before the tournament, I actually deflated it. I put some marine goop over top of where it was punctured and then I let that set. And then after that set, I put some gray, like Flex Seal spray over top of it. So it matched the deck.
Gotcha.
And that worked, that held. But the true permanent repair for it is you peel the deck matting off and you fix the puncture underneath. And then you have to put the deck matting either back on or you put new deck matting on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a little bit more than just, you know, what I can do in my garage.
Right.
But, you know, it's going to be if I end up keeping this boat and if I don't sell this boat to someone who wants to use it for just recreational purposes, if I end up keeping it, I'm going to have Trey Leach from Innovative Sportsman do a lot of upgrades to it to make it a more trustworthy platform for me.
Well, in comparison, do you know what their inflatable is, what their mill is on their inflatable?
So Trey's is going to be a 1000 and he also reinforced the side pontoons where you land fish. Mm-hmm. And he also reinforced the areas where you would reasonably expect to skid on the front and rear of the boat.
Okay.
I was actually out in Trey's boat today, out on the river with Jeff Little. We were doing some filming and I did more to Trey's boat today than I would have ever even considered doing to that iTrek 11. And mm-hmm. I didn't have a single issue.
Okay. And
whenever I say more, like we went through the Dolphin Narrows on the west side of the statue today, Jeff and I did.
That's actually kind of where I was. on Saturday afternoon. So I know right where you're talking about.
Yeah, we did some, like, we went out and, I don't know, can I curse on this platform?
In relatively, you know, as long as you're not dropping like F-bombs like crazy. But
no,
yeah.
No. So I sung a song to Jeff whenever I got out of the truck in the morning. I said, we're going to do some sketchy shit, and we
and
did.
You did.
We did, yeah. We were flipping boats, and we were, you know, doing that kind of stuff on purpose, and, you know, doing a little scuba diving and a little bit of everything today. But, yeah, you know, Trey's boat is, it's a fishing platform. It's designed to be, and it's designed for this river. So it's going to be a lot better of an option. But it's going to be a paddle boat unless you buy a motor for it.
Right. So, okay. Well, I mean, I was when I first saw the Lynx, I was like, oh, that's going to be my next boat. And then I saw what Rocks did to that. I'm like, okay, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
And then I saw the iTrek 11. I'm like, okay, that's going to be my next boat. And now I don't think that will be my next boat.
Honestly, I think the Outback is probably like the best all around boat that there is.
And that's why, I mean, it's done me, it hasn't done me wrong so far. Everything I've thrown at it, it's handled for the most part. Now I did struggle on Saturday with it, in some of the current and the, like I said, I haven't paddled that much for years. Like I've had the Outback for, I think 3 years now. And I had a Jackson Coosa before that, a Coosa HD, and I haven't paddled as much as I did on Saturday for 3 years, probably because
you probably would have been better off with the Coosa.
I wish I still had it because that would have been a pretty good option. But unfortunately, my wife made me trade it when I got the Hobie because
I understand that.
But and that's why I was kind of looking at the Scholey too a little bit,
Man, I got to talk to you about that because I was in it today. That was the other boat that we had out. So I started out in Jeff's boat today in the Innovative Sportsman boat. And it was, you know, it belongs to Jeff. But so I started out in that and did a lot of stuff with it. And we did some motoring around and all that. But then what we wanted to do was we wanted to teach a rock broach on how to correctly do a rock broach because, you know, Josh Evans hit a rock on Saturday and flipped his kayak and lost like $2,000 worth of gear. So the intent there was to teach the proper way to do it. Right.
Right.
You can't use the inflatable for that because the inflatable doesn't do the same thing as a rotomotored boat will do whenever you hit a rock.
Right.
You hit a rock with an inflatable and you bounce off of it or you wedge on it. And the rotomolded boat doesn't have that kind of give. So it you know, when you hit it, it automatically wants to do something different. So that's what we were doing with the Scholey today. And I have never done an attainment like that Scholey did today. I mean, I was paddling up a class 2 rapid. And I don't want to say I did it with ease, but it was easy. So that boat is specifically designed for that type of environment. And man, like I was so impressed with that little boat today for a river paddling boat. Like I was so impressed with it today because legit, like I was literally paddling up a class 2 rapid to redo this over and over. Cause what we were doing was shooting down through a chute and then basically turning the boat sideways on purpose, in order to hit this rock to recreate what Josh had experienced on Saturday. And we did it over and over and over and over. And, you know, I don't know if you know, but for your listeners, when you hit a rock sideways, you want to lean into the rock. The natural reaction is you want to lean away from it because you just hit something. The natural reaction is like, oh, God, I'm going to lean away. If you lean away, your boat is going to tilt up like this, and the water that's hitting it is going to cause it to fill up with water, and then you are going to flip. There's no – if you lean away from the rock, you are going to flip. So that's what we were teaching, was that lean into the rock aspect. And what it was, you know, you come down through the chute, and then Jeff teaches, he taught paddling for years.
Mm-hmm.
He tells the student to look away from the rock. That way you don't know when you're going to hit it. That way you're kind of surprised. Like, you know, you're going to hit it, but you're surprised when you hit it.
Right.
And then, you know, that's what we kept doing today. That Sholey performed well, very well. So anybody looking for a river paddling boat, that's the deal.
Cool. But, all right. Well, that at least gives me an option to check out. I'm still hoping for something pedalable, but we'll see what's on the horizons. You know,
for sure.
All right. Well, getting back to so strategies for fishing this fast moving water. What I talked to you a little bit before we got on is like most of my fish came from dragging a big TRD on a weight, and I just didn't feel very efficient for me as far as the water I was covering. But just with how fast I was moving, I felt like if I anchored up, then I wasn't covering nearly enough water. And I kind of hate that kind of fishing. But when I wasn't anchored up, I was just drifting so fast that, and having to worry so much about all the rocks and stuff, that I was constantly, you know, I'd make a few casts and then pick up my paddle again and kind of adjust and then make a few casts. And it just didn't feel like I was being efficient with my casts. I wasn't being accurate with my casts. So I was curious, you know, what kind of presentations worked for you, and then like how you just managed that aspect of it.
So what I was doing was different, right? I was fishing faster water, but the water that I was fishing was deeper.
Okay.
So, you know, I had, on average, I had 3 to 6 feet of depth.
Okay.
So, you know, what I was doing, it can't really be recreated in the shallow, fast water.
Okay.
The reason why you hear a lot of people talking about the topwater bite kind of falling off after the morning was because those fish in the morning were up in that shallow water. They were up there, they were eating, they were in that fast, shallow water because it's cool, has more oxygen, and, you know, there's a constant conveyor belt of food. Mm-hmm. They were there early in the mornings feeding. But after that sun got high, those fish, they have to go a little bit deeper. They have to find some deep water, because if they don't find deep water, they're susceptible to birds. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of birds of prey around, you know, on this river. There's eagles, there's all kinds, there's hawks, there's those commodore things. Like, there's all kinds of birds that will attack these fish if they can see them. If they're in shallow, fast water and it's clear and it's bright and sunny, they are 100% susceptible to being caught by a bird, right?
And yeah, and I've seen that happen a lot. I remember times where I'm struggling fishing and there's an eagle that's just picking them out. I'm like, dude, share the love here a little bit, man.
You know? Right? Yeah, those eagles are really good. They, you know, they can see a fish from a long ways up. And then they just dive bomb on them and grab them. But, you know, so that's why I think that people were still trying to fish that faster water, that shallow, faster water in the morning or past the morning. And they just, you know, my top water bite died off.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not that your top water bite died off. You just weren't necessarily maybe fishing the right area. Because if you look at what Nolan Miner did, he basically fished top water almost all day. What he was doing in the morning was throwing a choppo or a whopper plopper, mm-hmm. and getting them out in that more, you know, 2-3 foot range. But then as the day got this, you know, sun got up and the day got longer and sun was overhead, you know, he switched up to like a very finesse top water presentation. Something that didn't make a lot of noise, something that didn't move a lot. And, you know, he was fishing a bug pattern, right? So, mm-hmm. and that's kind of the stuff that they were feeding on, whether it be cicadas or, spotted lanternflies or, you know, grasshoppers or blue dragonflies is another one.
Mm-hmm.
He started fishing that pattern because that's what they were keying in on, and they would come a long ways away from it. I kind of got keyed in on that pattern earlier in the week before the tournament when my wife and I were up. We went up to Duncannon and, you know, just we walked across the Clark's Ferry Bridge, and I was just checking some areas up there. I wanted to go up and see, you know, like which creative access points had changed. Like, okay, did this creative access point get a log washed up in it? You know, did the bank get washed away from last year? Like, you know, I just wanted to see what had changed. And we walked across the bridge, and I could see some smallmouth that were like sitting way, way, way up in the water column. Like they were not on the bottom, so they were easy to pick mm-hmm. out. And I said to her, I said, watch this. And I picked up a couple pebbles and I threw it out over the bridge pier, and I watched it land. And as soon as that pebble hit the water, those fish were just right on it. Like they were just mm-hmm. looking for it. They came over and they're, you know, doing this number, looking up to see what had landed, which to me told me, okay, they're keying in on bugs.
They're looking up, yeah.
If something is landing on the water and breaking the surface of the water, they were coming to it to find out what it was. And, you know, I knew at that point in time, it's like, okay, well, this, you know, this tournament's going to be a finesse topwater deal. It's not going to be a big whopper plopper. You're like, yeah, you'll catch a couple fish on that in the morning.
But right.
That's not going to be the main presentation. Knowing that, understanding that the river was going to get a ton of pressure that week, 192 anglers coming to pre-fish, you know, a lot of people out on the river floating through clear, shallow water, making a lot of noise. I knew that it was going to be a very difficult tournament to catch fish if you weren't stealthy. And it's really hard to be stealthy when 20, 30 people are floating through where you're fishing.
Yes. Right? Mm-hmm.
So I changed my plan of action almost immediately. I knew that I wasn't going to fish a floated region. I wasn't going to fish an area that was going to get a lot of pressure. I was looking for something that people weren't going to be able to get to. And, you know, I knew that I needed to find faster water because of more oxygen content, but I also knew that I needed to find a little bit deeper water.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I did. That's where I went. That's the type of water that I was fishing. And in that area, I knew that bugs weren't going to be as big of a deal because it was really, really fast water. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be able to see it. If a bug lands on the water, by the time they get to it, or unless you put it right on their head, they're not going to be keying in on that.
Right.
And it was, you know, I also knew that the area that I fished had just held a ton of bait. There was a ton of bait fish. So for me, both Saturday and Sunday, I was on 100% of a shad pattern. I was throwing a spinnerbait, and I was throwing I barely threw any topwater. I think I caught two keeper fish all weekend on a topwater. But I was working my spinnerbait like topwater. My blades were fluttering out of the top of the water, you know.
Almost like a buzzbait kind of.
Very, very similar to a buzzbait. But I think the spinnerbait provides a little bit better hookup ratio than the buzzbait does because where the hook placement's at,
right,
compared to where the blades are at. So, you know, I was fishing the spinnerbait. And then when I was switching up to give them just a different look, I was throwing one of those FOM sushis. FOM Lures is a local bait maker here in Harrisburg, and he makes a real tiny little shad imitator that is like 4 inches long. I think it's a half ounce, but it's designed to be burned. It's a jointed bait. You know, there's mm-hmm. like three joints in it. So whenever it swims, it's like, you know, it's like a little S when it's swimming. It just comes at you in a little S. And that caught me a couple keeper fish. It caught me, there was at least one 19-inch fish that I caught on that bait. But that was my follow-up to it, to the spinnerbait. The spinnerbait was working. Mm-hmm. You know, the only time I was coming back through with that FOM bait was literally hitting it like maybe,
I throw the spinner bait and didn't get bit, so I throw the fawn bait. But probably 90% of my fish were caught on that spinner bait, and it was a 3/8 ounce. It's made by Battle Baits. I believe they're in Indiana or something like that, but it has a real light wire, and it was just basically a shad pattern. It was a kind of creamish white color with a little bit of blue tint in it that matches our bait fish really good. And, you know, just the other key thing, I guess, too, that I should note is the double willow blades. It couldn't be no Colorado blades or anything like that. If you threw Colorado, you weren't going to catch them.
I was going to say, that's what I actually threw. I caught one fish on a black spinnerbait with Colorado blades, and that was the only spinnerbait fish I caught. So yeah,
the Colorado blades was not the deal. They wanted so the willow blades are shaped like a shad, right? Mm-hmm. They're, you know, they literally are shaped like a shad. If I did not throw a willow blade, I would not have gotten bit. I'm confident. I might have caught a couple dumb small ones that were just like, oh, I'm going to eat that. But I do not think that I would have had the weekend that I had if I would have been throwing any kind of Colorado blade.
Gotcha.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
But yeah, I mean, that's what worked for me. I know up north, if you were throwing anything that looked like a cicada or a dragonfly or
now what, I'm curious, what matches a dragonfly? Like I saw so many dragonflies, and I remember joking with the guys that I was floating with before, especially when I got anywhere near grass, it seemed like I'd be covered. My whole kayak would be covered in dragonflies. Yeah.
So they make it, there's a couple lures. You really kind of have to look in like the, almost in like the fly section, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, there's a few of those out that would work really well. But, I know the one that Nolan was using was the Evergreen Gizmo.
Okay.
It's like a 1/10 ounce floating jig. And it literally looks exactly like those dragonflies. It's shaped like them.
Okay.
You got something in green or black, you know, maybe dip the tentacles in some blue. It would probably help because most of our dragonflies have got a blue tint to them right now.
Yep.
You know, that's, you really kind of have to look, man. It's like in like the specialty bait sections of tackle shops. You know, it's not something that a lot of people use. It's not something that a lot of people throw. But until those dragonflies go away, that's going to be the juice.
Right. No, that makes sense. And I was asking that more because I see that down here kind of in the York area where I fish a lot, because we have a lot of grass right now. And I was, kind of just shooing away the dragonflies because they land on anything they can to get out of the water. So,
yeah, because if they land on the water, they get ate.
Right.
So
Like they, if a dragonfly lands on your kayak and then another one lands and then another one lands, start throwing something that looks like a dragonfly, because I promise you they're landing there. They don't want to come near you.
Right.
Like you are the safest thing for them because you're not going to eat them.
Right.
You know, if they land on the water, that's game over for them. They're done.
No. And then that's exactly when you said that, it made me think of that I got to find something that mimics that a little bit.
Well, I know that fishing online is out of the Evergreen Gizmo.
Okay.
I know that, at least I think that Tackle Warehouse is out of them, because I bought, I think I bought 6 or 8 of them. And I think I bought what they had in stock. So, you know,
I'll be on the lookout for anyway. So, you know, I have a couple of local guys that might be able to come up with something for me. That
do you fly fish?
I don't, but I know quite a few people who do. So,
I mean, you could do a float and fly.
True.
You know, a float and fly, I think, would work. But you know, it's not a pattern that's like super, there's not a lot of baits made for it, you know, so yep. You have to really kind of, you know, you have to really do some searching, and honestly, a lot of it's going to be trial and error. Some of it, you might be going and, you know, picking up some of like the dumbest sounding stuff, like, but you know what, it works. So
like, right.
You're going to have to throw it on light tackle, and you're going to have to throw it with light line, and and understanding that if you're throwing it on light tackle and light line, you need to have light equipment. Like,
well, I'm trying to think of what the, I think I have a Savage Gear Mayfly Nymph that I've had some luck on, and it's tiny. It almost looks like a trout bait.
Can you still see me?
Yes, I can still see you.
Okay. Cause I'm switching over to Tackle Warehouse right now on the computer.
Okay.
And we're just going to go look at topwater baits right now. you know, it's, man, like, I don't know how long that pattern is going to exist. I don't know. Like, when do the dragonflies go away? Do you know that?
Well, I don't know. And I was just talking to someone this week about, I was talking to, I had a few guys from Tennessee come up and stay at my place. I was telling them that the mayflies, I feel like this has been an off year for mayflies. I saw at one point in time, I saw a bunch of little ones, but I never saw, and I've fished the river twice a week all summer long so far, and I never saw a good mayfly hatch.
The best thing that I can, I fishing down at City Island a lot because I live close. I see a good many mayflies down there, but that's kind of unfair because there's so many lights down there.
Right.
That they're very attracted to the light. And if you go down like City Island at nighttime underneath those bridge piers, a couple of them have lights. Excuse me. If you look at the lights, like they're covered in mayflies.
Well, and there's definitely times down here where we get the same thing. They actually turn the lights off on the 462 bridge because of that. And, but I, like, even with that being said, I still haven't seen those like swarms like I've had. Like last year, I had probably 2 or 3 different evenings where I threw topwater, nothing but topwater, and it was just every cast, bam, 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 and huge fish. And I was telling the guys from Tennessee about that, and I'm like, but this year, I caught my first fish on a topwater popper on my evening floats last night.
Okay.
And it just hasn't been the same this year. So for whatever reason,
I'm looking right now, and one thing that I just kind of came across, and it would probably work, is the Hedden Tiny Torpedo.
Yep, I know exactly what that one is. Yep,
would probably do well. There's a couple. I think they're made by Mega Bass. That they're actually, no, it's a duo bait. So the Duo Realis Shinmushi Cicada Bug.
It's literally a cicada lure. It looks like a cicada.
I think that one was like the one that was sold out like crazy last year, right?
Yeah, it was. It was. You couldn't find them anywhere. I have a couple of them down in the basement, but again, mm-hmm. they got to be thrown on light tackle as well because they're relatively light.
Yep.
So those would probably do really well.
It's interesting you said the spotted lanternfly because I see those everywhere. So I wonder what's out there that looks like a spotted lanternfly.
Honestly, if you just got something that looked like a cicada,
mm-hmm.
it's probably going to be this. It's not so much. I don't think it's so much a color.
Color. Okay.
As much as it's the profile.
Gotcha.
So the one megabass that I was thinking of is called the Grand Siglet. It's a real tiny little topwater. Has like some clear wings on it. That one would probably do well. Outside of that, you're looking at like specialty fly lures, you know. But mm-hmm. then like again, you have to find a way like, okay, how am I going to throw this with it, you know, to get it far enough away to, you know, to attack these fish. In real shallow or clear water, you know, you have to consider that too. So, you know, the ones that I just pulled up here, the head in tiny torpedo, you know, it's a 1/4 ounce, 1.7 or 1 7/8 inches. You know, they got a couple different options for that. They got clear, they got blue shiner, black shiner, baby bass, G finish shad. I personally don't think you need anything other than like a black or a green belly.
Mm-hmm.
So if you got something like that black shiner, I think that would work really well.
Gotcha.
The Duo Realis baits, like they got a bunch of crazy colors for that. But again, you know, just something that's got a dark underbelly, I think would do fine for that. And then the mega bass ones, you know, they're 1/4 inch. They're, you know, they have a couple more color options, but, you know, that's I think the three main ones that I think would work really well outside of that evergreen gizmo.
Gotcha.
But that's, like I said, that's a 1/10 ounce jig.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a floating jig that's 1/10 ounce, and it gotcha. Literally, like when you look at it, it looks exactly like a dragonfly. It doesn't really look like a cicada, which is what I think they are trying to imitate with that. It looks much more like a dragonfly than it does a cicada.
Hmm.
And
well, it sounds like it would work for me because I have seen a crap ton of dragonflies, so. So, I'm definitely going to check that out.
I was
going to tell you, I was really bummed. I started off Saturday morning up there throwing my Rico Popper. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure I lost it to a muskie because I was pop, pop, pop. And then I saw a splash and then it was just, whoop, there goes my line. I was like, oh,
yeah,
20 bucks right there. Gone.
You know, it's funny. The muskie in the river have been really, really active lately. Really, really active. And it's not good for them to be active right now. Because when you catch them, a lot of people that catch muskie right now don't know how to handle them, take care of them. Like, they're not a good – they're a fun fish. They're strong. Like, you think, like, this fish got a lot of teeth and it's angry and hateful. But, like, you take them out of water and they're little babies. Like – you know, you got to keep them in the water and you got to make sure you get them released quick.
Right.
When you catch them in the hot water with this heat, like they just don't do well. There's a lot of delayed mortality mm-hmm. with those fish right now. But,
and I actually heard quite a few people who caught them. You know, I know the two guys I was with, one guy caught two. And I know just through my Facebook postings that I've seen. A bunch of people fishing the, you know, that tournament caught them. So
yeah, a ton of muskie were caught this past weekend. I have a good buddy of mine who was fishing. He was night fishing down at City Island, and I think he caught three of them down there.
Wow.
And a couple of them were really big.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's, you know, they're a fun fish, but I like to catch them in the spring or in the fall, not summer.
Right. No, I hear you.
Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Cool, man. All right. Anything else that you want to share that you think would be good for the listeners to know about fishing the kind of water you did? I know I was going to say, too, I was looking for eventually we figured out the guys that I was floating with that we were doing better anytime we happened upon deeper water. We just didn't find much of it. We spent a lot of time going through the 1 to 2 foot looking for anything deeper. And, you know, the few places that we did find it, we caught fish, you know, so, but we just didn't find much of it.
I'll tell you something that I learned from Jeff, you know, fishing with Jeff Little is an incredible opportunity that I have that I get to do very often. But learning, you know, what these fish do in the summertime when it gets low and clear like this is they don't have to be anywhere, right? They don't have to be in shallow water. They don't have to be in deep water. They don't have to be in current protected water. They can be anywhere. So typically what they'll do is they'll find a pool of water that has a little bit of everything, and they'll rotate in that pool of water doing things that they do, right? And there's only a couple spots in that pool of water that they go there to eat. Other places they go there to relax. You know, they'll be sitting on the bottom in some push water of a boulder in deep water.
Mm-hmm.
Those fish are probably not looking to eat.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking to eat whenever they come to the top end of the pool, where it starts to, you know, where it goes from shallow to deep and then comes back shallow. Like, they'll move up into that top end of that pool and to the shallow water coming down. And that's where they'll be ready to eat. The best advice I can give to people when it's low and clear and you know, you find a deep pool of water is just sit there and wait, and then pay attention while you're waiting. Like, don't just sit there and wait aimlessly. Sit there and watch. Where's their water activity? Where are you seeing surface activity? Where are you seeing fish that, you know, oh, hey, look, there's these three fish that just appeared and you can see them, but they're not there forever. Then they leave again. That spot is where they're probably is their eat spot. And it might take a while, but when you learn that, when you apply that, you know, you're going to be more successful more often.
Mm-hmm. I actually remember having Jeff on and him saying just that, and almost saying that you were one of the hardest people he had to teach that to.
Spot on. I do not like to fish slow. I am a power fisherman to the max. And that's kind of one of the reasons why I looked for the type of area that I looked for in the tournament, because I wanted to fish my strength. Mm-hmm. And my strength is power fishing. And it's hard to power fish a bug or a Senko or anything else like that. Like, it, you know, I looked for areas that I could do what I was comfortable with. And, you know, that meant finding bait in the right kind of water. And then whenever I found it, I just did what I like to do and what I'm good at.
Mm-hmm.
Did it over and over and over. And I literally do, like, I'm going to tell you that I caught all of my keeper fish off of four spots.
Okay.
Four spots that I rotated between the 2 days.
Gotcha. And
on day two, one of my spots was blown out. So, like, I had three spots on day two that I rotated between, and I just kept rotating between those three spots because they were eat spots.
Gotcha.
You know, they were absolutely eat spots. There was one spot that I literally caught fish I think, on five casts consecutive because they were there and they were eating. Mm-hmm. Once they left, they were gone, and you weren't going to catch anything there. But when they came back, you were going to catch them there. I caught them there later, but they were small. Like, it's just finding that eat spot. You find that eat spot, and you're going to catch them.
Well, I know we made the mistake of thinking some of the spots that we were going to wouldn't have people. I saw people everywhere I went, and just people upon people. It was like I kind of started fishing a lot slower. I kind of slowed down, and it was like a highway going past me, you know, just one person after the next, after the next, after the next, just coming down through.
So I'm going to elaborate a little bit to where I was right now. And I'm going to say that, you know, the northern sections of this river from Sunbury to, you know, Fort Hunter, honestly, from Sunbury to Harrisburg got beat to death. I mean, beat to death.
I could not believe the amount of people I saw go past me. I remember when we put in on Saturday morning, we're like, oh, look, you know, nobody's at this launch, you know. Maybe we picked a good spot. Maybe we'll have the river to ourselves. No, we started seeing headlights up the shore, headlamps, and I was like, there's people up there. And then as soon as, like, it was time, go time, it was like a parade.
Yeah, and you know, that's a tough deal, and that's why I opted to go south.
Gotcha.
You know, I almost damn near at the boundary.
Okay. And that's funny because I drove past that every day.
there's good fish all up and down this river. Mm-hmm. There's not a stretch of this river that I don't think could a tournament could be won in. I think the daggone tournament could be won on largemouth if you got the right guy flipping grass down in Goldsboro.
Yep.
You know, so there's not a location in that was within the Hobie BOS boundaries that was bad. This fish has good fish, or this river has good fish in it, all up and down it, and it can be won at any stretch. You know, to be honest with you, you know what Nolan and Ewing both did was pretty daggone amazing, putting up that quality limits out of the, you know, similar spots 2 days in a row. If you look at all the tournaments that have recently happened on the Susquehanna and Juniata, you know, it's been that 91 to 93 inches have won all the one-day tournaments.
Right.
Well, you know, they did that 2 days in a row. Mm-hmm. So, you know, having 185 inches, I thought 185 inches would win. Like, I thought 185 would win, but I just didn't calculate in the fact that, you know, Nolan and Ewing are just that good. Like, you know, so...
That to put up back to back days of that is pretty crazy. Yeah.
It's, you know, what they did was pretty special. You know, I actually talked to Nolan about that last night and congratulated him and, you know, told him, like, man, what you did was impressive. This river it's good for in the summertime. It's good for the 90 to 93 inches every day. You know, when there's a tournament, but to most people can't do it 2 days in a row.
Right.
So.
Right. All right, man. Well, we are getting on near an hour, so I wanted to give you a chance to just shout out any sponsors that you have, and just let folks know where they can find you. I know your YouTube channel, I'm sure, got about 80 gazillion hits come before this tournament started.
Yeah, but, I had a lot of views for before the tournament. You know, the YouTube channel, just search Jake Harshman, and that, you know. That'll come up. As far as social media goes, it's Instagram and mostly that's it. PA.KayakBassin on Instagram. Sponsors wise, you know, I'm with Torquedo, been with them for a few years now. Love them to death. They take good care of me. Innovative Sportsman, Trey Leach.
I was lucky enough to get to meet him in person up there. I had had him on maybe a month or so ago, maybe actually probably a little more than a month, but it was cool to get to meet him up there too, and Jeff.
Yeah. Trey's a real good dude. He's, you know, he's one of my best best friends and you know, huge supporter. Yak Attack, you know, I use all their stuff, and Temple Fork Outfitter rods. All my rods are TFO. And, you know, that's Wildwear America. That's my jerseys. Manda makes all my jerseys. She's with, and she's got some of the most comfortable stuff. Like, it's, you know, I would rather wear her stuff than like AFCO and this other stuff. Like, you know, she makes custom stuff at the same price that you can buy a single AFCO shirt. So, you know, she's good to me. Those are the people that support me. You know, it's they're all good to me, and I don't have any desire to change any of that.
Awesome. All right, man. Well, again, thanks so much for coming on, especially on your wife's birthday. Tell her we said happy birthday, and I'll let you go let that dinner settle. And, you know,
I'm going to be asleep here in like 5 minutes.
So, again, thanks so much for the info, and good luck. What do you got coming up next, you know?
Well, I think I have an MAKBF tournament in Virginia. And then in September, we got another tournament on the river with MAKBF. It's going to be in the Goldsboro to Harrisburg, but nothing above the 83 bridge. Gotcha. And a couple DPS events that I may or may not be able to fish because of work scheduling. But and then, of course, the TOC. Oh, and the native event, the October 8th Big Bass Power Hour. That's going to be fun. That's MLF format. They're paying out big bass every hour.
Oh, that's right. I do remember hearing about that. Now that you said that.
That one's going to be fun. And I think the entry fee is only like $100 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, it that like I think if they get over 100 anglers, it's going to be $1,000 every hour.
Yeah, I remember hearing that, and I was like, holy cow.
Yeah.
And that really is kind of a, you know, you can, you know, walk away easily. You know, all it takes is one fish.
Yeah. I mean, imagine if you won multiple hours.
Yeah. Holy cow.
So, you know, that would be you might catch two fish all day, but if they're both 20 inch fish, don't catch them in the same hour. So,
all right, man. Well, thanks again so much for coming on, and, looking forward to have you on again, and we'll pick your brain some more. So I
anytime,
appreciate it.
Man.
Every time. You got tons of good information. Yeah, no problem, man. All right, guys. Well, thanks for tuning in. This has been the Bass Fishing for News, where we bring you the techniques, the tricks, and the tips to help you rip more lips. You guys have a good night.
Thanks for tuning in to another killer episode here on Paddle and Fin. Be sure to drop a 5-star rating, a thumbs up, or smash that subscribe button on any platform you're listening in on. Be sure to check us out on Waypoint TV, waypointtv.com. Make sure you sign up for the Fantasy Kayak Fishing League at paddleandfin.com/fantasy. You could support this show through Patreon, patreon.com/paddleandfin. Don't forget to check out the website, paddleandfin.com. Catch us on YouTube. If you got a question, comment, or want to see a future guest on the show, be sure to email us at paddleandfin@gmail.com. Shout out to our show supporters, Yak Gadget. You can check out all the fine kayak accessories at yakgadget.com. Pelican Professional. For all your cases, coolers, and lighting needs, go to pelican.com. Rocktown Adventures. Your Midwest premier paddle sports destination, go to rocktownadventures.com. Eastport Marina, the beautiful destination on Dale Hollow Lake. If you're looking for lodging, kayaks, kayak accessories, or anything fishing related on the beautiful Dale Hollow Lake, go to eastport.info. And Jigmasters Jigs, when in doubt, get the jig out. Go to jigmasters.com and fill your tackle boxes today.
Through the Blackwater Bayous and in the dark Louisiana night floats a duck camp, alive with the sounds of swamp pop and the smells of Cajun cooking. From the Mississippi Delta in Venice to the Cajun prairies of the Southwest, me and the Duck Camp Dinners crew will be hunting and eating it all.
This is Duck Camp Dinner.
Join me, Chef Jean-Paul Bourgeois, and the whole crew every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
Once in a while, it's fun to go like just full-blown redneck on these fish. This is like high-tech cane pole fishing right here.
From the white sandy beaches to the crystal blue waters, enjoy the best fishing Panama City Beach has to offer during Chasing the Sun. Sundays at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.